Ladies and gentlemen, Zebra Stripes Podcast, episode 12. And yes, I know it's episode 12 because I actually looked before this episode started, something I usually never do. I want to start off by saying, like, the support from people of this podcast these last 2 years that we've been doing it. We really do appreciate it. Continue the support. Now we need you more than ever. Don't just listen to the episode. Like, rate it. Give us a rating. You know, preferably 5 stars. If not, you know, okay, I guess. But you know, give us a 5-star rating if you really like the pod. Tell a friend. Leave a comment. Subscribe to the pod so that you get notifications whenever we drop a pod. We're in our bag right now. It's the end of the NCAA season into NBA. So you're going to get a consistent pod from us now. This isn't football season. You're getting a consistent pod. So if you were waiting to just hear regularly from us, from Zebra Stripes Podcast, you'll definitely hear that now. And we have another good one today. I'm joined, as always, by Coach Whit LeJour of Bridgeton Academy. Coach Whit, how are you doing?
I'm well. I mean, you know, full disclosure, you got me up early this morning after a late night, at least for the over 60 crowd, watching the championship game. But I'm wondering if that wasn't, like we often do, so, you know, a shameless plug. I mean, not even shameless, a long shameless plug. And normally we're making shameless plugs for others, but in this case, we shamelessly plugged ourselves. So that got me kind of excited about the morning.
Absolutely. And I really wanted to get this out. If you're listening to this right now, most likely we are recording early Tuesday morning after a late night. And if you're on the East Coast, for sure, late night. If you're on the West Coast, you don't understand what all the fuss is about. And guess what? We really love and respect you for that. But these 9:35, 9:40 start times for these games, it's brutal on the East Coast. Like, by halftime, people are looking at their bed like, wait a minute, do I really want to watch the second half of this game? Obviously, I was up and you stayed up to watch it. I would say a pretty anticlimactic end to what was an unpredictable and enjoyable tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it was, it would have been shocking to see any other result, but obviously, like this tournament showed, I mean, that would have been the only lack of surprise, that a shocking result, but basically it was the biggest foregone conclusion going, and there were too many ways, like we discussed before we got on air here, too many ways UConn was going to win that game, and too many ways that San Diego State really couldn't. But they're not far away, like you said to me. They're not far away. So, you know, hats off to San Diego State for game effort. And, you know, I thought watching it there, you know, you make a few free throws coming out of the timeout, you just edge closer. That's where maybe that negative pressure thing that I've talked about comes in. So they just couldn't quite make the plays or the shots when they absolutely needed to, just to keep it interesting. But even that might not have been enough, as everybody knows.
Yeah, I just thought when you get down, when you're that type of team, a team like San Diego State, I think this happens to St. Mary's as well, because they play a similar brand of ball. When you get down by 12 and 13, you have to have the ability not only to string together 4 and 5 stops in a row, but then you have to be able to score 4 or 5 times in a row. There was a sequence, a stretch of time in the first half where they jumped out. They came out the gate like hot, and I looked up and it was 10-2. San Diego State, and UConn just kept coming and coming and coming and coming. A couple shots go down. All of a sudden, it's 10-9. And then from that stretch, there was nobody making any shots except for UConn. But it wasn't like UConn went on this crazy like blitzkrieg of a run where it was like bucket after bucket after bucket. It was a long, like a 5 to 6 minute stretch where it was like miss, 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 miss UConn layup, miss, miss, miss UConn three, miss, 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 miss UConn two free throws or layup and a free throw. And all of a sudden you looked up and they were down double digits. And South Dakota, I'm sorry, San Diego State hadn't scored in 5-6 minutes, and then they put a graphic up that UConn's on a 15-2 run, and that's the problem. When you don't have someone who can get you a bucket, and they were trying, they were getting really good shots. They were missing point blank shots at the rim. They were missing open jumpers. They just could not get a shot to go down, and they had nobody to turn to say, hey, you, get us a bucket. We need a bucket right now. Meanwhile, UConn had several of those. UConn had like three dudes who was they were more than willing to put the ball in the cup. And I think that was ultimately the undoing. And I text you at halftime, and I said, I just don't, for all intents and purposes, this game is over. And you were like, except it's not. And I knew what you were getting at. Like, yeah, don't count the chickens before they hatch. And in my mind, I was like, I get that as a coach. I'm with it. But I just don't see how they could put together enough to be able to overcome what UConn could do at any point in time. The only chance they had to get back into this game was for them to somehow find a shooting stroke that they have not seen all year. I thought the last game, interesting enough, versus FAU was probably the best I've seen them shoot the ball during the tournament. And it took that effort to come back and beat FAU. So when I saw FAU get out to a 14-point lead, I was like, oh, well, if UConn does that, this game is over. And sure enough, that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say is, like Danny Hurley, I guess he goes by Dan now, but said at half, you know, they should have been up by 20. So that's the oldest trick in the book, right? If you don't put someone away when you have the chance, it obviously can come back and bite you. So, you know, that San Diego, you know, again, it was they hung in there. But I agree with everything you're saying for sure. And it's why I'll tell you what, San Diego State is why, like, you probably that's as good a team as you can be, minus a guy or minus 3-point shooting. Like, they play as good a basketball, that's as good a run as you're gonna make, minus, you know, the Kemba Walker. Or, you know, the minus the Carmelo, minus the one guy that puts you over the top, or minus shooting. And that's why coaches at every level, you know, when get into these off-season deals where they're going like, okay, we got to go recruit some shooting, or we got to go recruit a bucket getter, or whatever it might be. Because you watch that and you go, you know, but they're about as close as you can be to be. They are elite, but, you know, they're about as close as you can be to being a champion. Minus that element of shooting or a guy. So, I mean, unbelievable season by them. And I was saying again before we got on, you know, their best chance for national championship might have been the 30-2 team, you know, the COVID year. So they're not going away. And I'm sure they'll join the Pac-12. And, you know, this is probably just going to fuel San Diego State's rise to, you know, to Gonzaga level basketball, perhaps on the West Coast, a new West Coast power that many people, basketball people, are aware of them, but maybe casual fans are less aware of.
So you don't think they're going to just be the West Coast Virginia?
No. I think they'll. I don't. Okay. I have no reason to base that on. I just think that they'll, you know, they'll do what coaches do, which is they'll get greedy and say, this was great. Now what do we got to do? And they'll add a wrinkle, you know, kind of like Virginia did, right? To win their national title, Virginia got a couple of pros that could really get the ball and put the ball in the basket. And that solved all the problems with the disciplined offense.
Yeah, but the problem, my problem is that then a championship didn't allow them to continue to get those guys.
Well, that's and a different story.
And I'm like how? It's worked for everyone else. Like everybody else that gets it, that wins a championship starts getting those guys. Like Baylor wasn't getting a bunch of high level guys. They were getting transfers in. They won a championship and all of a sudden they got a top 10 guy. Like the fact that Virginia wasn't able to flip championships into the blue chip prospects, or at least a consistently being in the running for a blue chip prospect, is that emblematic of the style of play, or is that just it's Virginia, like, which we all know it's a great academic institution, fantastic academic institution, but not necessarily historically one of those places where elite level basketball players want to go.
Yeah, I mean, Ralph Sampson might take exception, but I would say this. First of all, it's not like they dropped off the face of the earth. They won a few ACC titles and done some of this, and we all know that NCAA runs are just unique. So that's the problem in our culture, that it's NCAA tournament or bust, championship or bust. So Virginia's done nothing except win.
But once you win it, it's championship or bust, right?
Yeah, but I even think when you have it, there's a little, you know, again, I've used the Boston College example, or you know, we have a greedy culture. We want more.
Okay.
So people, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So to say more, obviously, I'm just talking out of my rear end, but I often do that, so I'll continue to do it. You know, what we don't know is in this world we live in, how far is Virginia willing to go to secure said elite players, and how far not only is the institution and the people behind the major sports, right? Because their football program is not a major power. And so there's a reason, you know, I'm assuming if they wanted to be, they might be able to. You know, they have people smart enough to be able to figure that out. And then, you know, Tony Bennett, you know, personally, maybe that's something. So I think coaches have decisions to make there about, but that's getting out over my skis and, you know, not certain. I just know, Tony Bennett's always done more with less. So, but it might be that, you know, he's a guy that could benefit from, you know, sneaking a clear-cut pro into his lineup every now and again to take
that. Absolutely. Preferably a clear-cut pro that wants to stay for at least 2 years.
Yes.
Because I don't think these types of programs are plug-and-play from high school kind of programs. Very similar to Villanova, which I don't think, is a plug and play from high school kind of program. These are programs where you really need to understand the culture and how things are done at that school in that program in order to be successful in it. So you almost need, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, do you think obviously one and done is here to stay, but you know, experience is ruling the day. The transfer portal, obviously, as a way to get that experience, is ruling the day. So you think folks, you know, at the level where they can recruit the plug-and-play guys, you think they're, you know, equally right now trying to get the experience that would seem to be the safer bet?
I don't know. I think that your plug-and-play guy – that's transferring is not thinking Virginia. Right. I don't think the plug it. That's the problem. They're not thinking Virginia because Virginia's style, and to a certain extent, San Diego State style, these teams that are willing to grind you out, it's hard for them to get a guy who says, I want to go somewhere where I get a chance to try to score 20 points a game. Like, I want to. Meanwhile, UConn style, FAU style, that's where these guys want to go if money is not in play. And it's interesting, and since we've already kind of talked about it, the transfer portal and how the transfer portals work. We had an interesting back and forth going yesterday about NILs and how the NIL has kind of affected the transfer portal. And I think we came out on different sides of the argument. Not necessarily because I didn't agree with you, but I just felt like it may not have been to the level that you were talking about. Here's something I was thinking about for y'all listening. We were talking about NILs and Coach Whitted discussed the fact that the NIL, the reason that the portal is getting so crazy, especially with these talents that don't seem like they have a reason to be leaving a program, is because they want to see what kind of bag they could get somewhere else. I'm paraphrasing. But am I representing that right, Whit?
Yeah, and an NIL for my buddies out there, that name, image, and likeness, you know, the ability to make money off of themselves, essentially. As I watched the numbers exploding again, and it wasn't so much the highest level transfer, like the top 20 or 40 programs. It was more these guys from really good majors and that have, you know, really good careers going, very good chance of being pros and all that. And so I said, you know, like, it's one thing when you see the transfer portal with a disgruntled player for all those reasons, right? And that's kind of what we've all usually associated the transfer thing with, is the guy that is unhappy with his playing time, his role, the coach, you know, whatever it might be. So I see these very successful players at really good programs. And I said, you know what, it just strikes me, and I haven't asked anybody in the know, but it just strikes me that this may be the result of guys saying, you know what, this is my chance. You know, I may not be ultimately an NBA player or something like that, and this is my chance to get the deal I can't get where I'm at. So I'm basically going to become a free agent. So that was my argument, and I thought your reply was good. I'm going to do some investigative work myself, and there could be truth both, but why don't you lay out, you know, your counter argument?
So, well, my counter argument was that I didn't necessarily disagree with that they may be looking at it as free agency, but I also looked at how the and as you know, a lot of people talk about NIL as being one of the things, and I really talk about this extra year as being a detriment to the game for basketball and for football, especially. The kids that are coming out of high school that don't get the love that they think that they deserve, they don't achieve the level that they think they deserve, they end up at Iona. They end up at a Central Connecticut State. And now they go there and they're putting up 25 a game. And they look around and go, man, sudden now it's much easier.
Well, that was great. I didn't hear like the last 2.5 minutes, but because it all went frozen. So I'm well rested now. I just that was either a media timeout or you sub me. You know, you sub me. And but I think what you said was, you know, the guy gets to a lower level because there aren't the same opportunities above him, puts up huge numbers, and then says, you know what, the bright lights are calling my name. I can go play somewhere in a marquee place where I want to play, where I maybe belong. And it's less to do with dollars and cents and more to do with, with the shine.
Hey, and how about this? Because this was another thing I thought about after we had discussed it. What if it's not dollars and cents per se, but it is value? So when I walk into the athletic facility at Monmouth, it's a nice facility. But when I walk into the athletic facility at St. John's, it's just different. Different level of athletic training available, a different spread. I've got more at these bigger programs just looking around that they have to be able to subsidize my athletic experience, to make it more comfortable, to make it more palatable. Like there's a lot more out there with some of those bigger programs. And so it's like, yeah, I really liked my time at St. Peter's, but I didn't like the fact that we didn't get brand new shoes like every other week. I couldn't just walk into into the athletic equipment office and get a brand new pair of Nikes or a brand new pair of Jordans or a brand new pair of Adidas whenever I want it. But if I go to XYZ higher level school, then all of that is available to me. So maybe it's not in the dollars and cents, but still in the value that's being added by going to one of these programs.
Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, I can see that for sure, but it just harkens back to what, you know, a lot of moms and dads have said to us from a very young age, which is that bigger isn't always better, or the grass isn't always greener. And so you get into that, you know, million-dollar question mode about when you jump on potential opportunities like that, and when you call it all good. I'm reminded of like Cameron Indoor, you know, isn't the biggest, baddest thing on earth, but it's got something going that's really special. Now, that may not be a great example, but
from a facility standpoint, Cameron Indoor is kind of a dump. But yeah, from what they put in and around that facility,
right,
is state of the art.
You know, but at some point, what's interesting is at some point it won't be good enough. Like at some point, people will say
somebody's going to want to redo
it to bed. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Someone's going to try to replicate or update Cameron. I don't think they'll ever try to tear it down and build something new. I think they'll try to renovate. And when they try to renovate, I think it'll lose some of the mystique that the old place had.
And if someone wants to renovate the Wolver Dome up here in Bridgeton, the Bucket Barn, Memorial Gymnasium, if any of our listeners want to do that, you know, give me a shout out on social media too. Speaking of which, but every once in a while people talk about the big change here, the upgrade or the this and that. And, you know, forever I've always said we have a great gym. Any basketball person that comes to our gym sees it for what it is. But that being said, you could try to expand it out and not lose the charm, rather than going and building again another generic high school or prep school gymnasium that would lose the character and history that this place has. But that was the second shameless plug of the broadcast. So
I actually think it's interesting though, because I don't think that gym should be touched. Like, I think that gym is perfect the way it is. From a Hooper standpoint, obviously, from a marketing standpoint, and from a how can we, you know, do more, I feel like there should be another gym.
Well, that for sure. Which is,
I feel like there should be an ancillary gym for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's likely to happen. I would just say, in full disclosure to listeners that don't know our gym, and it's not alone in this regard, but, you know, since we're playing with, largely college level athletes coming in for post-grad year, and these other teams certainly have the same, something approaching a college level court rather than a smaller size would be better for the game itself.
Absolutely.
Probably easier on the officials. You get crammed in, and then, you know, yep. That's been one of my arguments in recent years as I've gotten older. You know what? I think these guys have a hard job because they have a hard job, but some of it's they don't get the depth perception.
They don't have a space. They don't have the space.
Yep.
Necessary.
Yep. Yep. So
that makes sense. That makes sense. But I definitely think that the opportunity to move around, while it can be tied to the bag, I think that the level of money that you make in basketball as a pro could somewhat offset the need to move for the bag.
Yeah, but not like if Jaylen, you're at Oral. But
like
if you're
Jaylen
at Oral
DeLoach.
Roberts, if you're at, you know, see, I'm not talking about these guys at the highest level. I'm talking about the really good mid-major plus type players.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying, God, they're really good and they're secure and they're going to get their pro opportunities. And they're smart enough. They're with good coaches to know, like, man, I got to be careful. And yet they're putting their name in. And I'm going, okay, it just got to be, you know, they got to be going into coach saying, coach, you know, I love you and I love it here. This is my chance, you know, and that's, I'm guessing that's, I am absolutely guessing that's part of the deal with a good number of these guys. Hey coach, nothing personal, just business. And I could be dead wrong, but.
No. And so here's why I was saying that. So VCU, Mike Rhodes at VCU, left to go take another job. I don't remember exactly what job it was that he left for, if I'm not mistaken.
Did he get a job at Penn State?
Possibly. But he left. And he left a really good VCU team. Like, left a really good VCU team, which did not look like the cupboard was going to be bare next year. Immediately, some of the top talent off that team hit the transfer portal. Specifically, Jaylen DeLoach, this 6'8", 6'8", 6'9", forward, stretch forward, from Georgia, who's had a really good first 2 years there, you know, built. He's one of the kids who I believe made a choice. He had other higher offers coming out of Georgia. He had higher offers from higher, but he went to VCU because he thought, I could go to VCU and really legitimately develop my game for the pros. He has some pro talk. People are talking about him as in NBA circles, but he hits the transfer portal instead of declaring for the draft. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know because I haven't talked to him about it, but I'm pretty sure his thought process was, okay, let me find another place that will then help me expand my game that one little bit more so that I could then attack, you know, the NBA and take my chances there. I don't think it was necessarily about the money. I think the playing field has been leveled, though. It's like, hey, the coach can leave, now the players can leave, and them exercising that isn't necessarily always about the bag, but I bet the bag might come into play when it comes to which program he decides to take. Like the thought process in leaving may not have been based off of money, but where the person lands might be based off of, might have something to do with what someone offers them from outside of the basketball program.
Yeah, maybe. We'll leave it there. Maybe.
I like when you do that. You're like, I'm gonna punt on that one. The women's game, fantastic game. Actually, no, not fantastic game. Excuse me. Fantastic tournament. What I think is interesting, because the women's tournament, very similar to the men's tournament, no number one seed represented in the Final Four. No number one seed in the championship game. And I'm sorry, no number one seed in the championship game. There was a number one seed in the Final Four, South Carolina. South Carolina is beaten by Iowa. South Carolina really upset by the way in which they had been covered, by how their girls were perceived in comparison to the way Iowa's girls were talked about and girls were perceived. Then we get to LSU, and LSU felt extremely disrespected. They felt disrespected the entire tournament. They were a three seed, if you can believe this. They were a three seed, and they only had two losses on the season. And guess who those two losses were to?
South Carolina.
So they only lost two games all season to a team that had not lost a game in a season and a half. And somehow they went from being what should have been a one seed, instead of Virginia Tech being a one seed. They should have been a one seed. They dropped all the way to a three seed. Iowa, who had some hiccups throughout the year, ends up a two seed inexplicably. They're a two seed. So now everything coming into this game isn't about LSU. Everything coming into this game is about Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark this, Caitlin Clark that. Caitlin Clark, this is her coronation. The championship game was against South Carolina. The champion, very similar to what we talked about with UConn in Miami. The championship game was the semifinal. And this was supposed to be Caitlin Clark's, you know, crowning. And those LSU girls have the internet. Those LSU girls sat back and listened to all of the talk about who they were and how they were in there. And they went out there and just waxed. They waxed Iowa. And I had said before that they would not be able to do to South Carolina what they did. They would not be able to do to LSU what they did to the girl in South Carolina, because LSU just has way too many people that scored. And the one thing that nobody talked about, and no one continues to talk about, is the fact that Caitlin Clark doesn't play any defense. Fantastic, phenomenal offensive player, but she doesn't play any defense, at least not any defense that works. And so with that, we come out of it, and these LSU women who felt disrespected this entire time, especially Angel Reese, as she put up the 35th double-double of the season. And all of the talk was about Caitlin Clark being the unanimous, you know, player of the year. And they felt disrespected. And so they let Iowa know it. And they let Caitlin Clark know it. And all of those girls have respect for Clark as a baller, but they let her know it. And the internet's lost their mind. The internet's lost their mind. They called the girl classless. They said that she needs to act like she's been there before, even though she's never been there before. They caught. I mean, Keith Olbermann, like, cursing at her. I mean, just it was ridiculous the amount of vitriol these people all had for LSU, and it sparked the debate about what is class and what is sportsmanship and how sportsmanship should look. And I mean, I know we tend to talk about things, but I can just tell you from my perspective, and then I'll let you, you know, take it away. I think sportsmanship is overrated. Let me rephrase that. I think the way in which we think about sportsmanship is overrated. The handshake line is probably the biggest farce in the history of basketball. Not one time have I gone through a handshake line that I wanted to shake the other team's hand. To me, it didn't say anything about sportsmanship. It just said, we have to do this because this is what we've been told we have to do. Like, not one time did I go, oh my gosh, this game is over. Let me line up in a single file line and walk past and shake the hands of a bunch of people who had no effect on the game. Now, did I want to dap up a dude that I had a really good fight with in the game, like a really good battle back and forth with in the game? Yeah, I don't need to get in the handshake line to do that, though. So the idea of sportsmanship in that way for me never resonated, which also, without knowing what people are saying on the court during the game, I can't judge someone's actions at the end of the game because I know what gets said on the court when I'm playing. And to me, being somebody looking from the outside in, I can't judge or be angry at somebody for showing that level of emotion, even if I found it to look like it might be disrespectful. Floor is yours, sir.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, so I'll make a few comments, but I'll probably have to, you know, re-listen to this pod like I do all the time, and then probably bring back some points that I might miss. But I would say, hey, sometimes in sport, we both know, you know, that genuine case of disrespect is actually a blessing. So if you're LSU, it's like you didn't have to, you know, all of us as athletes and coaches, you know, we'll make up reasons to, you know, to make it us against them or whatever it is. You know, we're not getting the respect we deserve. But in this case, maybe, you know, LSU didn't even have to worry about that. It was served on a platter to them. So, you know, it actually, again, it's in the moment, you know, you feel wrong maybe, but in retrospect, you say, okay, good. You can't draw it up any better than that. I think on a lot of the other stuff, I think all things can be true or not all either, but a lot of things can be true, which is to say, you know, Caitlin Clark is a hell of a player, obviously. And whether she's this or that, there's a lot of good players. So I think she a little bit had the Larry Bird thing going on, you know, with a Steph Curry like jumper from range. So, you know, and then ran into Magic, i.e., you know, Angel and the sisters, but, you know, a team that was better than they were. So that I just look at and say, well, you know, Caitlin Clark's a heck of a player, and I certainly don't know if she's the best player in the country or not. I mean, that's why sometimes, you know, those kind of discussions are just for fans. LSU had the better team. I thought the difference in the game, frankly, was the length and rebounding and, you know, play around the basket more than anything else. That's what stood out to me, is it's just LSU had a little more talent and length and more weapons in general. They were just better. So, you know, Iowa ran it. And then obviously what part of what we're saying here is the you know, the racial component to the conversation is real. And I haven't really
study the timeline of it just enough, or, you know, to know what Caitlin Clark was doing the game before, and then the LSU girls know it, so they give it back, and then, you know, most visibly with Angel Reese pointing at her fingers. Yeah, I think the athletes are all good with it. The internet's just one of those, you know, Twitterverse is just, you know, is what it is. So sportsmanship is a really neat piece of the conversation. You know, I we've talked about it before. Those lines are a little funny. I do think, you know, I can ignore. I like what you said. Like, hey, when it's done and you competed with someone, right? Because that's what competition is. That warrior spirit of I find out, I learn about myself only through the, you know, the engagement, the competition with others. So therefore, I need to respect my opponent. And so some of that respect can be afterwards. So whether it's in a single file line or whether it can be more informal, right? We have changed the rules essentially of a lot of things in sport, and the way we define sportsmanship is, you know, and the way it plays out on the fields and courts and rinks is different today than it was 75 years ago. I still think there's a place for it, no doubt. And then, you know, I mean, it's worth the ongoing conversations on every level about what that should be. And somehow it's got to, like, same old thing. I think it's got to be with the right people, which means it's got to be with the athletes. Hey, what do you guys think? It's got to be with the coaches, the athletic directors. You know, it can't be, no disrespect to the politicians or this and that, but it can't be with these outside groups, including fans who aren't in the arena, that, you know, have their own agenda about this and that. So I think sportsmanship is a good thing, but it you know, okay, sorry, playing around with my electrical cords. Yeah, that's what I do. Anyway, sportsmanship is still alive, but it's got to be a conversation we continue to have.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that really charged me up, like, I'm really trying in my older age to give people the benefit of the doubt that I would have never given them in my 20s. So when I see a text by or a quote by Jill Biden where she says, who was at the game. She was at the game. Yeah, you know, we're going to have LSU there, but I think I want to have Iowa there too, because those girls played such a good game. It was just such a good game. And I was like, I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt that she doesn't understand basketball, because that game wasn't good. Like, that game was never in question. It was It was very similar to the UConn's game.
100%.
Like, how, like, you can hit. They, at one point in time, they hit four threes in a row. They took a, I think it was an 18-point lead down to six. And then LSU scored the next, like, three, four buckets and went right back up to double digits. Like, there was never a time that I thought LSU wasn't going to win that game. And so for her to say it was a good game, and that's why she wants to bring Iowa, the optics just don't look good. Because no one's ever talked about bringing the runner-up to a championship to the White House. And it's almost to a point where if I'm LSU, like, yo, we ain't going. If this is what you're trying to do, you can count us out. We're not going. We don't want to hang out with the runner-ups. We don't even want to go if you're planning on inviting them. Like, invite Caitlin Clark another day. Invite her individually. Hey, she was the standout from the tournament. You know, if there's a tournament MVP, you can give it to her. Cool. Like, if you want to invite Caitlin Clark, cool. But talking about inviting the entire team, as well as the national champion, like, what are we doing here?
Like, yeah, well, I mean, I agree with you 100% on that as well. I mean, absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure Joe had to grab her later and say, oh, my goodness, God, you got to vet these ideas out before you get it out there.
She's so smart, though. I really like Joe Biden.
Well, it's not, sometimes smart people say dumb things. So we all know that.
Absolutely. And I just feel like maybe she just didn't realize in the moment, not only the fact that it wasn't a good game, but the optics of saying, I want to invite the predominantly white team who just got mollywhopped by the predominantly black team to the White House. Like, it just doesn't look good.
I'll
say this about the women's game that's really a frustrating thing to me. And I know we're probably, most of our listenership are probably men. And so, like, I say this hoping that women hear it and it opens up a conversation. Stop blaming us men for the popularity of, or for the lack of popularity of, women's basketball. We watch the game more than you do, women. The numbers all bear it out. By the way, and when I go and watch women's games, the optics bear it out as well. You'll see way more men in that gym than you'll see women. And so, like, the final frontier for women to build the women's game is to get women to patronize it at the level that men patronize the men's game. And until that happens, like, y'all can miss us with all, you can miss me with all this, all these narratives about men have to do this and this. No, it's on you. This is your sport. I know a bunch of female basketball players that do not like watching female basketball. What does that have to do with the men? Like, until you find a way to endear yourself to women, and that is by not just pushing the narrative of one superstar in college basketball, it's pushing the narrative of 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 superstars, because they're all over the place in the women's game. And yet all year, the only name we heard was Caitlin Clark. And so it has to be more than just one. You have to push more than just one. When the NBA was at its height, it wasn't just one. It was one with a bunch of people chasing the one. It was Jordan and a bunch of dudes that are really, really good chasing Jordan. It's LeBron and a bunch of people who are really, really good chasing LeBron. It's Kobe and a bunch of people who are really, really good chasing Kobe. And so you can't just only ever talk about one star and negate all of the other ones that are all around the place, because that's not how you're going to build the women's game.
Yeah, well, again, if I'm smart, I'll just decline comment at this time to make sure I don't step in it. What you're saying makes a lot of sense to me, for sure. The other optic that I did notice when I watched the game with my wife, by the way, a woman,
was with my wife, a woman.
Right. Well, you know, she, her, there, them.
Yep.
The arena was full, or largely full. So, and I was thinking to myself, you know, I'd like to, I know I've read about it, just not paid enough attention myself to it, you know, other than a couple years, you know, the Final Four fiasco a few years ago about over facilities. But, you know, the idea, you know, what the attendance, how the attendance is tracking, say, this year versus 5 years ago versus 10 years ago. So it's, you know, and then the breakdown of that. So anyway, I think you make a good point. I essentially agree to your, the other thing I want to say was, you know, the college game, it, you know, like women are in this case, it's women, you know, the growth of women's sport, because it could be a totally different issue, right? There's an evolution And so in the college game, men or women, the narrative is typically about coaches. It's not about individual players, right? In the NBA, it's about individual players, not coaches. So as a general rule, you know, in the women's game, then I it's going to be about Kim Mulkey, you know, and what she's doing, you know, in year one at LSU, or it's going to be about your girlfriend at South Carolina, Dawn Staley, or it's going to be about Geno, okay, or it's going to be about Tara Vandiver or Pat Summitt, you know, and that's in the men's game. Obviously, it's going to be about Coach K. And then occasionally an individual player will break through, but, you know, it's just sold differently. So I don't think Caitlin Clark should get any shade for, you know, being an outstanding player or being part of the narrative. I just think that probably more women should be part of that conversation if you're going to go that way.
It's not Caitlin Clark's fault. Like, none of this is Caitlin Clark's fault.
Right.
This is the people around Caitlin Clark. And I agree to a certain. So when college basketball players were not just going one and done to the NBA, you got to know the stars of the game. And anytime we get a guy who stays and is good for multiple years, you know his name. You know their name in the college game. Drew Timmy, 6 years. Right. But like once the one and done's happened in the 1 or 2 years and 1 year, he may not have been that great. And as soon as he's good, he's out. That's not the way the women's game works. Like they have to stay. So your Paige Beckers, your Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, you know, you have these stars who all have to come back to school. None of them are eligible to go to the league. So, like, there's the opportunity to do what you're saying, which is continue to have these coaching narratives. Kim Mulkey, some people are talking about she has an argument to be the greatest of all time because she's done it at two different places in the modern era of women's basketball. I say, ooh, hold up. You know, maybe not yet. But then you also have a way of building with these young stars who are not only going to advance the women's game at the collegiate level, but also advance the game at the professional level as well. I want to give applause to the NCAA, which is something we never do. But I want to give applause to the NCAA. I think the reason that you saw attendance at the level it was not just because of the two teams that were playing, but also because they had the Division II and Division III championships in the same arena around that same time. Yeah, thought that was possibly a genius move.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think it would be great for the men's game too.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, but I also think that having it in the same weekend, you know, is the right way to go too.
Yeah.
So that's something that they
they made shifted. It all about women. All about the women's game from all levels. That is ridiculously smart. I don't know why it hasn't always been like that.
Yeah, like, but you could also say they
linked everything up before.
Right, and made it all about basketball on the same weekend. So men and women, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So link the whole thing into the, you know, college basketball weekend. I want to say this too, so it doesn't, we should probably in a future episode, jump back onto race and sport and how it plays out, because there's so much there left on the bone. And I do, you know, like everyone, you think you're making progress, or you think you're, you know, evolving the conversation, and then you're not. And so, I don't know, diving into the weeds, which, we don't have the time to do now, but I think the point you made that, you know, hey, wait a second, Iowa, really, Jill, like, whoa, do we get optics? Do we get, are we sure? What are we, you know, and, you know, all of it. So there's conversation there for sure, because because again, we're at a time when we're talking about a polarized country, and it's not, it doesn't have to be about race. It could be about anything.
Yep.
And yet we know it's just the single most divisive issue going, you know, that's either going to bring us together or rip us apart. I mean, it's just,
yeah, the biggest names who all called Angel Reese classless, though, the biggest names who did it, they were all white. And then when you go into the mentions or the comments of those people, you see predominantly white people. And then every once in a while, you'll see a black person who says, nah, they're right. That wasn't a good move. Right? And then you go into the comments and all the comments that you see that support that comment. Oh, I'm glad you said it. They're all white. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, clearly nothing's ever 100% on one side or the other side. So there are white people who don't think it was classless. Like, there are white people who don't think that it was poor sportsmanship. But for a large amount, it really split right down racial lines, even to the point of the biggest names in sports media and how they fell on one side of. Keith Olbermann was the one that, like, that one blew me away, because Keith Olbermann's a guy who's always been the dude that's willing to buck convention. And so for him to go that way, and then he kind of drew it back. He's like, yeah, just so you know, I didn't even like watch the game. I just saw the action and, you know, didn't know the backstory of it and blah, 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 blah. But man, Keith Olbermann, dude, are you serious?
Yeah. Well, that's why I think now that the weekend's over and this and that, I think this is going to spin back around. I think there's going to be a boomerang to this, you know, and I think, you know, kind of, again, shameless plug 3 here today. I think we're ahead of the curve on the conversation again, because I think this week some people are going to come back to, hey, by the way, you know, not lost was – and this whole thing on sportsmanship, which again is, you know, that sells, you know.
Conversation. I was nerding out during the game on Witten. Yeah. So like I went on because I was shocked by how white Iowa looked.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't realize it. I've watched a few of their games and it never really registered to me before. But juxtaposed to a team full of black women, who by the way have white women on their bench that don't play a lot. But, like, you see all black women, and the optics were there. And so I went and I started looking at their roster. The point guard is black. She's just light-skinned. Like, she's just really light-skinned. She might be mixed race, but, like, who cares? That doesn't matter. She's black. She's a black woman. The young lady that they bring off the bench, she's a black woman. But she's so light-skinned, you would notice it. You would notice it if they weren't playing 5 dark black women on the other side. And so, like, it's one of those things that if you don't actually, like, do a little bit of research, all it takes a little bit, do a little bit of research, you would think this was a team full of white women versus a team full of black women. And the optics of that are what get people to split the side. Like, they probably don't even know that Iowa has a black starting point guard. She's from Cincinnati. Her dad was a former basketball player. Like, they probably don't even know it because they haven't invested the time in actually getting to know the people on these teams. They just see Iowa and geographically what you normally see in Iowa. And they see Louisiana State and geographically what you would normally see on a basketball team in the South. And that's what they rolled with. And so I think there's a great conversation to be had there, because there were so many storylines that we never even got because we were too busy just talking about one person and them hitting threes from the logo. Like, people actually disrespected Dawn Staley and said that she got out coached. And I said, how do you get out coached in a game that you lost by 4 points in the last 20 seconds of the game? Like, how was that out coached when you took advantage of your biggest I mean, you milked your biggest advantage, which is they can't do anything with us inside, so we're going to bludgeon them for all our points. And their biggest advantage was we have a girl who can shoot the ball from 38 feet with a hand in her face, dead red, and she doesn't care. Like there's no defense for that. There's no defense for Steph Curry. If he's making three-pointers, you're going to lose. If he's hitting them at that clip, you're going to lose. And it's the same way with Caitlin Clark. If she was on top of her game to the level that she was on top of her game versus South Carolina, then we may be talking about a different outcome. Because now that changes the way LSU has to play. But she wasn't. And so because she only scored 30 points or close to 30 points instead of 41-42, that 11-point swing, and then the fact that the girls that she was guarding combined for damn near 30 points themselves, they were able to negate her offensive, power. And so now we were left with what we were left. It was just, there were so many stories in there that they could have talked about, and they harped in on one, and I really think they missed the boat on an opportunity to tell some really good stories within this game. I know it's our time, so we gotta pick this up another day. Coach Witt, I always appreciate our ability to have these conversations that fall along lines. I think there's some great conversations to have. I look forward to having them with you. And we look forward to all of you out there coming along for the ride. Once again, Zebra Stripes Podcast, episode 12. Make sure that you like, make sure you subscribe. I'm Coach Gene Clemens. That is Coach Witt. Until next time, peace.